comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're going to give it just a couple of seconds here for our TV audience to sync up with us. And there we go. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. You know, folks, it is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. I want to begin tonight, before we bring our guest on. Our guest will join us after the break. But I want to begin with something that affects this show. It's not in the realm of paranormal. It's not in the realm of the strange and unexplained. But it's something that's going on that affects this show and every other show you listen to. And it has to do with this tragic, tragic event that took place in Tucson, Arizona, the mass shooting, and of course a federal judge was killed, a congresswoman critically injured, and my sympathy and empathy and condolences and every other descriptive word you can imagine from the depths of my heart go to the victims of this horrible crime and to the families, and especially my condolences to the families of those who have lost loved ones in this crime. More is about to be lost. There are more proposals being brewed up now, and the mass media is ginning this up. More proposals to further inhibit free speech. There's all kinds of stuff going on now with, you know, mass media saying they're doing just endless questions and interviews with, do you think it's right that the Tea Party is being blamed, and do you think it's right that, you know, they're blaming Sarah Palin and all of this? Well, by continuing to stir this, you're going to continue to get people on there that say, oh, well, yeah, they're to blame. You may not like Sarah Palin. You may not like the Tea Party. Some of you do. But the person responsible for this crime is the guy that pulled the trigger. And I've heard people say, well, we've got to look into what laws we can pass to make sure something like this never happens again. Well, that's about as stupid as it can get. Folks, how long has murder been illegal? Did that stop it from ever happening again? When they made murder illegal, did that stop it from ever happening again? More laws do not make you safer. More laws do not make you freer. They make the government more powerful. They make you less free. And look, freedom of speech is a safety valve. As long as people can say what they really think, they're less dangerous to you. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is J.C. Johnson. He's been with us before, and he's always an interesting guest. J.C. Johnson is a, well, I use the term cryptid or cryptoid investigator in the Four Corners area here in the United States of America. The Four Corners area is, if you look at a map of the United States that has the state lines drawn on it, you'll see it. It's the one place where there's a big cross where you've got four states whose borders, whose state lines form that big cross. That's the Four Corners area. And so he is an investigator of reports of cryptozoological creatures in that area. JC, welcome back to the show.
It's always a pleasure to be on, Kevin. Always.
JC, last time you were with us, you were telling us about the investigation, and I see on your site there's a video about it, an investigation of a Bigfoot-type creature. And there's some white pipe that you baited for this creature, and apparently it worked.
Well, what had happened actually is these people contacted our contact out there on the reservation, and they found this pipe out in the field, probably about 100 yards out away from the pipes where they're normally stacked up. It's an irrigation pipe. And they're about 20 feet long. They're very heavy. And what had happened when they went out there initially that night, they found a skunk not far away from the pipe, and it looked like inside the pipe a struggle had ensued. The perpetrator punched a hole on either side, trapping the skunk in between. And just later investigating, it looks like whatever, well, I know what it was, but whatever attacked the skunk ripped the skunk scent gland off while it was still inside the pipe. And then came back probably periodically through the night and borrowed some more things from the skunk. But initially, it wanted the scent gland, the skunk sac, off of this poor skunk. So.
Well, it had to be a creature with incredibly strange taste.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the last thing I would think about eating or having anything to do with would be a skunk. But I think what we came away from with this whole thing, obviously, whoever took that skunk sack needed that skunk sack. And my feeling on this is probably a mother protecting her young. And what's amazing is this pipe wasn't rolled out into the field. I believe after it had trapped the skunk in between the two punch holes that it punched through with its hands, it carried the pipe out into the field where the skunk, if it did get away, would be getting away in an open area and be easily caught. And from the night before photos, I've got those up on my Facebook page, and the night before photos are up on our Crypto Four Corners channel on YouTube. And our perpetrator appears to have been bitten quite a few times because there's a lot of external blood on the pipe. Most of the internal blood inside the pipe would be from the skunk. We've got a lot of external blood, so we believe the perpetrator was bitten quite a few times.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Four Corners area in general, and there's a specific story I want to ask you about. You have the video, by the way, up on your YouTube channel, but about the skull. But let's talk about this Four Corners area, and a lot of people will be familiar with it. A lot of folks in the United States are familiar with it because they've taken vacations there. Many of our listeners are in that area. So they know what it's like, but there are a lot of folks around the world who have no idea what this area is, what it's like. Let's describe that, and then we'll talk about some of the phenomena that's taking place out there.
Well, we've got basically in the immediate Four Corners area, you've got high plateau, high desert areas that typically in the summertime, are scorching hot. And then we've got these green areas, these surrounding mountains, where you get up into, you know, 9, 10,000, 14,000 foot elevation mountains up from basically the desert floor. So you can go from 105 degrees up to 70 degrees in a short period of time. So it's quite a contrast. And we also encompass the largest Native American reservation in the United States. That would be the Navajo Nation. And just very diverse, very diverse.
Now, let me, I tend to do this sort of thing, so let me do this. I'm for those who are watching our TV channel, you can now see the graphic that's up on our website. For those of you who are not watching our TV channel, you can look at the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see exactly what's on our TV channel. And what we have in the background is a map of this part of the Four Corners area. There's a red star on this map, and just to the southwest of that, there is a designation for a town, and it's pronounced Chinle. And that is just to the west of Window Rock. Okay, now Window Rock is not on the map, but I've spent quite a bit of time up around Window Rock. I think I've told you about that. And folks, I got to tell you, if you go to this area, go to Chinle, and there is in Chinle a Holiday Inn. The restaurant in that Holiday Inn is world-class food. That's not a joke. It's not your standard hotel fare. It really is world-class food, and I've had some excellent meals there. So that's if you're up in northeastern Arizona, Chinle, good place to eat. All right, now let's go back to the desert. And well, it's not really so much a desert. It's more like plains, isn't it?
Kind of a, you know, a high plains type mm-hmm. deal. But I mean, you know, we do have around 100. With, you know, with the contrast, the mountains are just a hop, skip, and a jump away. We do have sightings down here all the way along the river bottoms. What was amazing this year was a particular area of research and study that we've been involved in was all the youngsters. And, I mean, even a baby was sighted, a baby who couldn't walk yet, who was crawling like a human child would crawl. You know, this is something I hadn't heard of before, but a very, very credible witness.
All right, now, you live in this Four Corners area, right?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Why did you get involved in investigating these stories, these accounts of, well, I think a lot of people would call them Bigfoot. Why did Sasquatch, why did you get involved in that? What got you going in that?
It was years ago on the Mogollon Rim, and once again, that's in the Four Corners area. That's over in Arizona. And the Mogollon Rim, I'm sure you're quite familiar with, having
yeah.
been out here,
mm-hmm.
is a very vast, vast wilderness. And there's several particular places up there where, I'll say back in 97, 98, 99 in particular, I was pretty much an outdoor guide, and I had a paddle club that we would go and do river runs. We would go and do get together in some of these mountain lakes and reservoirs and so forth, and have a little get-together and things like that. And when all these strange things started happening, it kept pointing back to something completely unknown, at least in those areas, that we had company of something that I was completely convinced was only a northwestern thing of the United States, you know, the hairy hominid, the Sasquatch, the Bigfoot. And, you know, I was slowly coming to realize that we had them out here in the Four Corners area, which was mind-boggling. You know,
uh-huh.
Wow, they don't belong here. You know, they belong up in the Pacific Northwest, not out here in the Four Corners area. So that's what got our interest. And I pretty much was a curious thing. I don't think I really went to... I was trying to make a good case of their existence out here for many years. And I don't think I really got hardcore serious about really trying, not necessarily to prove, but to make a really good case of their existence out here. It was in 2005. Chief Dan, he's been on your program before, Leonard Dan.
Right. Uh-huh.
Had been talking with these witnesses out in Nananizad, Upper Fruitland, about the, what we later call the Three Amigos, because I've seen them, I've watched them. They were out there eating corn in this guy's field, and they were eating melons and you know, just kicking back, having a great time. And when the Navajo police showed up and investigated, they brought out the criminal investigations unit, they cast a track, and in the end, they said it was evidence points to a bear. And that's when, you know, I cried foul. I said, wait a minute, you know. So then that's, I think I really got serious about making a better case for what was going on here, because I felt we'd been lied to,
mm-hmm.
and I felt the public had been lied to. And also, you know, if these were bears, and I'm driving to work every day, and I see these children in these areas where these bears were seen, why are they standing out there with sack lunches in their hand waiting for the school bus in an active bear area? Where's the hunters? Where's the bear traps? I mean, if that happened in an urban area or semi-urban area around Farmington, New Mexico, they would have bear traps out. They would have hunters out.
Mm-hmm.
But the case was simply closed. And I just, that's when I really decided to make a case for what was going on out here. More out of curiosity, not curiosity anymore, but to really make a case for what was going on.
Why do you think they chose to be deceptive about this when they investigated it?
Typically, too, and this is what I've run into time and time again, is we've got a lot of superstition plays into a lot of the accounts that happen out here. And a lot of times we'll get a really good lead, and by the time we get out to talk to someone, look at the evidence, they don't want to talk about it anymore. They're afraid the Yeyetso, the Meyetso, the Anangluchi is going to come back and get them. You know, we've got some very, very superstitious things going on, even with some of the law officers. Now, a lot of them aren't, you know, the younger ones that are coming in to being and getting on some of these beats, you know, your beat might be a 60-mile stretch, you know, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're more aware and they're less superstitious than some of the older officers and some of the older game wardens over the years that, you know, if they see one of these things, they'll die a year later, and that, you know, the guy just wants to make retirement and not ever see one of these things and not ever have anything to do with one of these furry hominids. So, you know, that's changing. And now up on the Lukachukai, it appears some of the younger officers were asking some of the deer hunters and elk hunters, you know, last year and this year, did you see anything unusual on your hunt this year? And they're starting to pay more attention to what's going on and keep track of some of these things. So that is refreshing.
You have photographs on your website of footprints that are ginormous, really big.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the creature that goes with those footprints?
Probably that I can identify as each in an individual capacity, probably 10 different individuals over the years.
Uh-huh. How is it that there could be so many of these beings, so many of these creatures up there, because people are running into them and sighting them pretty frequently, and nobody seems to be able to get a picture of one?
At least a good picture.
Right.
Or, you know, I've got what I consider to be a good picture that'll probably always be controversy, and I've had different people work on it and work with it, you know, and some people come back saying this is a solid light-reflecting object. I've got the after pictures that show that there is not a solid object there, like volcanic rock. mm-hmm. or a burnt cedar tree. You know, the photo will always be a subject of controversy, and I've had some really, really good people work on it. And I still believe I've got a photo of something. And it looks very similar to a large, upright, hairy, hominid-type creature. It looks yeah. a lot like what I've seen up there. So, I mean, that's where I'm at with that, you know. And if the subject of the photo was, say, 8 or 10 feet tall, I think there would have been a lot more receptive response to this photo several years ago. The problem is the subject of the photo is over 16 feet tall.
How many feet right tall? Away, whoa, wait a minute. How big?
Over 16 feet tall, judging from the surrounding pinyon, juniper, a cedar tree vegetation. He's towering, I do believe it's a he, towers over the surrounding.
Well, we know area. That in the early part of the 20th century, the late part of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century, all across from the Midwest all the way west, as settlers were expanding across what is today the United States, they were uncovering graves as they would dig for their buildings or in some cases mining operations, and they would find these tombs with skeletons and many accounts of them being 12 feet tall. And even
and another thing that was brought up interesting, by the way, if anybody wants to add me on Facebook, just do the search on Facebook, JC Johnson, and I'm the guy wearing a shoulder rig and a hat. You can add me on Facebook, and I've got several pages of pictures there that you're welcome to go look at, and we've got sketches of local anomalies and local strange things. A lot of expedition photos over the years around the country and around the Four Corners area. So there's something for everybody there. Go ahead, if you'd like, add me as a friend on Facebook. But back to that. What a lady brought up on Facebook the other day was the account where Brigham Young was on horseback.
Okay, tell you what we're going to do. We got a break coming up, and I don't want to interrupt that story once we get into it. So I'm familiar with that story. I want everybody to hear it. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to step away for a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with J.C. Johnson. He is a cryptozoologist, a cryptozoology investigator in the Four Corners area. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is J.C. Johnson, and J.C., you were about to tell us this story about Brigham Young on his horse.
Yeah, the story, the gist of it is he was trotting along with his horse, and a hairy individual came up alongside of him, pacing him, and he kind of thought it was a surly fellow, and he asked who he was and where he was from, and this hominid said he had no home, he just wandered the earth, and he was after men's souls. And at that point, he told Brigham Young he was Cain. And at that point, Brigham Young called on the Lord Jesus, and this creature either disappeared and or ambled off. We don't get more detail from that, but I thought that was interesting. Also, when they came across on their way to Salt Lake, a lot of them saw these burial mounds on the way coming out from Missouri, And they were looking for where these huge battles took place, and they saw these mounds, and they thought they would dig up swords and bucklers and shields and everything else, and they were digging up 10, 12, 14-foot-long skeletons. So I find that interesting. I also find it interesting, one of the areas that we worked really hard this summer and this spring, on one side of the river, the San Juan, you've got the Navajo population. And on the other side of the river, you've got a large Mormon population, wonderful people. They're not very cooperative when I come down to questioning. And, you know, it's pretty tight-lipped over there, actually more tight-lipped than with Diné, the Navajo, which is really tight-lipped. But you talk with the Mormons on that side of the river, they call it Cain. You know, and I should, there sure is a lot of Cains running around out here, my goodness. But it's kind of a contrast, you know. Both sides of the river, we've got two different interpretations of what these large hairy hominids are.
But on both sides of the river, you're getting reports of people seeing them, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, I've had, you know, more cooperation with the people living on the Navajo side of the river as far as, not necessarily going on camera, which we did get some people on camera this year. There was a young woman who saw a youngster, probably maybe 4 or 5 feet tall, and it was broad daylight Saturday morning, 10 a.m., and she's driving from her mother's house, and she's looking, thinking, my goodness, that kid sure is dressed funny, because he was reddish fur from head to toe. And the closer she got as this individual was looking at her, driving in her Jeep, she started thinking, my goodness, this kid sure looks like a monkey. When she got right up on it, I mean, it hit her all at once. And I've known this lady for 2 or 3 years now, and I've, you know, done some follow-up reports on some strange things they found. This is the first time she's seen a hairy hominid, and she was really taken aback by it. But this thing stood up, and where we would probably need the aid of our hands to stand up in the form that this individual did, he just stood up from a completely squatted position without supporting himself with his hands, just stood right up and then took off into the brush. The only difference from the gray fur, the bottoms of his feet, not gray fur, I'm sorry, the red fur, the bottoms of his feet were gray, and it's gray foot pads,
uh-huh.
Grayish white.
All right, I want us to talk about this story about the skull, because in what you're doing, it's not just that there are a lot of reports of Sasquatch out there. You run into reports of things that are, by any definition, really paranormal as well, but related also to some kind of cryptid, some kind of cryptozoological creature. And this story of the skull was related to you by a young man who told you about finding this skull while he was out in the wilderness. And then the story that goes with it is phenomenal. Can you share that with us just a little bit?
Yeah, it kind of in brief is he found this skull. It had a little bit of material left attached to it, a grayish fur with some flesh type deal, but otherwise it was fairly well a clean skull. Had been out in the desert for some time, and he brought it home, and at first he put it out in the front yard, and then at some point in time he put it in his room, and then it really kind of bothered him, kind of freaked him out a little bit, and I believe he put it back in his front yard, and then he felt really uncomfortable with it. So the first time he only took it maybe a couple of miles away and went down into a ravine and left it. And he'd gotten there by vehicle, and when he'd gotten home, there was a skull in his front yard. And at first he's thinking, okay, somebody's playing a joke on me, somebody followed me, my dad or somebody, you know, and it's late, I got to go to school tomorrow. So he went to bed, and the second time he got rid of it, he went four-wheeling. He went several miles off into the desert and dropped it down into a canyon, basically. He gets home, and the skull's right there back in the front yard. And at that point, he realizes that he is in possession of something that is probably not a good thing.
Okay, now before we go on further with what he did, let's describe this skull. Because his description of it was phenomenal as well, much larger than any of the known animals that it possibly could have been.
Yeah, and what was really interesting to me is the bottom teeth, the big canines that came up, or not quite tusks, but large canines. They weren't tusks, but a large canine-type tooth that came up from the bottom, which has been described out here in some sightings of a wolfen-type upright-walking creature and or a wolfen-weir slash skinwalker. I mean, you know, the sky's the limit on determining what we're dealing with, you know, when we get into that realm. But, yeah, definitely there was something interesting about the skull. And the size of it, too, was very large. And also that we've got vertebrae coming up out of the bottom of the skull as would something that would be fixed on some shoulders that we would have an upright walking individual over an animal on all fours.
Now, he had a taxidermist look at it. Of course, a taxidermist deals with dead animals all the time.
Yep.
And this taxidermist said, man, I don't know. It doesn't look like anything I've seen.
It was similar, you know, the closest thing you could put it to is similar to a javelina, but the javelina, one is a pig, not a pig, one it's a peccary, and that's what the javelina are. And actually, their closest relative is the hippopotamus.
Mm-hmm.
They're a completely different species. They're not swine. They look similar to pigs. They have a pig nose, but they only get up around 40 or 50 pounds. You're familiar with them. You probably got them in your backyard, but... you know, the size of this creature would have been like a 1,000-pound javelina that walked upright.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that was the closest he could determine the skull to be reminiscent of the taxidermist.
Tell us about the little ritual that he went through. He got a Navajo friend to go with him, and they did some kind of a ritual out in the desert. Tell us about that.
Basically, he had found a plant that, and I call him Mike the Hunter. His name is Mike. He found a plant that Mike wasn't familiar with, and he was going to burn it. And as you can tell from the video, he said it was a really windy night. He didn't use any lighter fluid or anything. He kept trying to get this plant to light, and all of a sudden it just went poof, and it lit up, and he shouted something in the four directions. And, you know, this went on for some time. And basically the Native American friend of Mike's told him, you know, if the skull is still here in the morning, you're cool. You're good to go. And if it's not here, you're screwed, is what he told him. So, and as he said, the next morning, you know, they had some strange things happen that night. Some things came around their little camp area. But the next day the skull was there and they left it. It wasn't the way they left it, but... left it there.
Mm-hmm. And then he moved, and his new roommate, he told him the story of the skull, and the roommate wanted to go see it. He didn't really want to go, but he finally consented. Takes the roommate out there, and what happened?
The roommate wants to bring the skull back, and Mike protests and says, I'm not getting screwed with this thing again. And eventually, you know, the roommate said, well, I'll take it. I'll take responsibility for it. And they brought it back. And at the time, you know, the youngsters at the time, you know, here's just a few years ago, they'd come over, they'd play cards, they'd get together and things like that. And the skull became a coffee table piece, you know, a centerpiece. And people would look out of the corners of their eyes and see this skull turn around and look at them. Or raise off the table, things like that. And they would go and turn the skull back around, looking in the opposite direction. And a very few moments later, it would be turned around looking at them again. And I believe at one time, one of their friends saw the skull do something that just freaked him out so much, he left and never came back.
What do you think it was?
I think it was probably something akin with the Skinwalker and the Black Magic, is what I believe.
Okay, now, I thought that's where we would go with this, so I have a question all prepared for that. A Skinwalker is a human that has entered into this Black Magic cult. Chief Dan described for us how a person becomes a skinwalker. They basically they have to kill someone in their immediate family, and in some cases they cannibalize them.
They bring them in as a sacrifice, is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they will cannibalize them. There's some necrophilia that takes place, and then there's some cannibalism. There's also potions and powders made from the different various organs of the body and so forth. I mean, they make complete use of the sacrifice when it's brought in. Mm-hmm. And it has to be somebody near and dear to you. It might be one of your children, a mm-hmm. sibling, your own parent, your grandparent, something of that nature.
Okay. Now, the stories are, and these are stories from... not just the Navajo, because after we did that show, I got email from Native Americans that are part of other tribes, other nations, other than Navajo, and they have similar stories, similar, I don't want to say myth, similar stories, similar accounts. But the Skinwalker, according to these Native American accounts, can transform himself into another animal.
There's an apprenticeship thing that goes on. And typically what will happen at first, you know, after you start apprenticing with, you know, the head warlock or whatever, you start wearing the hide of the animal that you want to emulate. And mm-hmm. over a period of time, and, you know, as you grow in this power, this evil, you actually can transform probably almost 90% into emulation of this animal. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be something kind of kinky about it. Like Leonard will tell you, the elk that was basically in its front yard, when it turned around, it took the butt end of it kind of a second or two to catch up with it. You know, it was just something kind of kinky. I mean, it resembled an elk. It wasn't just somebody wearing a hide, you know, or a costume. I mean, obviously, there was something completely, nearly transformed into the emulation of this animal. What I find out here, 90% of the time...
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up with 90% of the time right after this. Listening to the Kevin Smith Show, my guest this evening, J.C. Johnson. We were talking about these skinwalkers, J.C., and I said, do they turn into, it's a human, and they can turn into an animal. And then you had started to say about 90% of the time something, and we had to go to break.
Well, we're back after break. 90% of the time, it's a wolfen-type entity. I mean, your classic werewolf scenario. The glowing red eyes and the glowing yellow eyes without no outside light source. And the wolfen appearance and walking upright and being 6, 8, 9 feet tall.
Have you ever seen one?
What's that?
Have you ever seen one yourself?
Nothing that's shifted. Not that I can be entirely sure of. And once again, you asked me about my sightings of the upright hairy hominids as far as what people would consider to be a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot, you know. And I've narrowed that down a little bit more because there's a couple of occasions where I'm I'm not sure what it was. It was just large, upright, and hairy, and fleeing the area, and or something I couldn't identify completely. Yeah, I used to probably think I saw about a dozen Sasquatch-type things, and I'm kind of narrowed it down to just completely convinced of what I saw when it comes to those things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I may have witnessed something other than Sasquatch, believe me.
All right. You have interviewed people that say they have seen up close and personal these skinwalkers. Have you interviewed people that you consider to be highly credible that have said this?
What I put together, I'll get you the link to it. We've got the video for sale. It's on Kanaki Video. It's called Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends. We've had that out for a couple of years now. But I've got a private link to it on YouTube. I'll send it to you. If I haven't already sent you the movie, I don't know if I have or not.
No, you haven't.
But, I'll get you the private link to it, and you can watch it. There's several interviews there, firsthand accounts. One account, Darren Weeks actually shoots this 9-foot-tall, weird-looking thing that hops and runs kind of like a kangaroo. Very interesting. I'll get you the link to that.
Okay, but and I want to see that, but you have interviewed people. You've stared them in the eye while they were telling you the story. You've asked them questions. Have you heard any accounts of skinwalkers from people that you consider to be very credible?
Everyone I've ever put on tape that I've released in any way, shape, or form, yes.
Okay, so
here's
the question I have. Back to the skull story. I asked you what you thought it was, and you thought it was maybe one of these skinwalkers. So if it is, this would imply that if you kill a skinwalker while it is changed into something else, we'll say changed into a wolf. If you kill it while it's a wolf, then it must remain a wolf, I guess, in order for the skull to turn out that way, right?
You know, that's something I wonder about, too, because, you know, I get private and personal emails and private things that I'll probably never put out, but there's accounts in the past, you know, where somebody shot a wolf and it turned back into a human, or somebody shot a coyote and it turned back into a human.
Mm-hmm.
Type deal. So, you know, it leaves me to wonder. I don't think there's any one for all situation when it comes to these evils. A particularly sad story that was related to me, and I this gentleman outside his hogan saw something out by the sheep corral, and it looked like a wolf, and there was sheep, so he shot it. And all that night he heard sobbing, a woman sobbing. And when he went out the next morning, it was a young female. She was nude, and she was dead. And just a kind of a sad story, because she was very young. And the father came looking for this woman, his daughter, some months later. And all he knew of her is that she'd come to see a man about buying some sheep. And that was the last he'd heard of her. So somehow she'd gotten drawn into this particular craft, you know, a beautiful young woman, basically is what this guy found, you know, the next morning. This was many years ago, a story related to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's children as young as 7 years old that get brought into this. And what happens, once you come in, you bring your sacrifice. Once you come in, your whole family turns, or in turn, they become a sacrifice. I've seen it destroy entire families.
So if one family member decides to become a shapeshifter, a skinwalker, then the whole family has to come into the cult, or they get sacrificed? Is that what you're saying?
That's basically what it comes down to. Or they fight. You know, there's family members that will fight. A young woman in Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends, Amelia, they they didn't give in to this thing trying to get into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept trying to put her younger cousin into a trance, and she kept going over there slapping her out, telling her not to look at it. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. And, you know, they fought it, and they got away from it, all of them. You know, they all got out of that, got away from it. And they didn't get turned in. But grandma, their own maternal grandmother, was probably behind that entire night's activity, what happened to them.
Okay, now, in doing the work that you do in the Four Corners area, you're out there. And for our listeners who have not been to this area, let me tell you, you can drive for miles and miles and miles and not see houses. You can walk for even further. If you get out in that wilderness and then leave the road and walk, you can walk even further and not see houses. I mean, this is some of the loneliest stretches of land in the United States. Big, big stretches of land where you don't have any visible signs of people living. So you're out there, you're working in that area. It must obviously be known that you have done some investigative work and some documentary work on skinwalkers. And you're out there in that area working. Aren't you afraid to be out there?
I'll tell you what, the braver man than me is Leonard Dan, Chief Dan, because he lives on the reservation, you know, and he's had some incidents. Last year he was driving home during a rainstorm, heading back to his home and following fairly close behind several other vehicles, and he didn't see any of them swerve or turn out of the way of any kind of obstruction on the road, and suddenly a log gets thrown out into the road in front of him, and he blows out two tires, bends the rims, almost wrecks the truck. And obviously he has to pull off, change one of the tires, and limp home on the other three. And while he's out changing the tires, something came up through the mist, through the fog, very close to him. He could feel it. And at that time, he went into the cab and he pulled out his Smith & Wesson 40 cal and he racked around back in it and put it on his hip. And then the presence backed away. So obviously this presence didn't want to be introduced to any lead that evening. and he feels that it was a purposeful attack on him. And, you know, and
what about you? Have you had any incidents out there?
Nothing. I mean, things come close to me.
Mm-hmm.
They get very close to me, but, you know, not necessarily my religious views, because religion to me is dead.
Okay.
It's my personal relationship with my Creator, Jesus Christ, and He watches over me.
Why do you do what you do out there?
It's the truth bug, and it's not that there's so many truths out there. I mean, you know, if you go to my Facebook page, I've got a bunch of photos of the horrible chemtrails that they're dumping over the Four Corners area. You know, that's another truth, and we know what's in these chemtrails, and they've been analyzed, and we've got the heavy barium, and we've got the aluminum particulates and all these other things, you know, and we get to breathe in all those aluminum particulates every day, and it's early Alzheimer's for all of us, unfortunately, and it's a sad thing, but they're coating the skies daily. I mean, that's another truth, and I want people to be aware of that.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. My sympathy to you for whatever kept you away for that first hour. We're talking with J.C. Johnson. He is a longtime investigator of cryptozoological creatures and reports of same out in the Four Corners area, a vast wilderness area in America. J.C., I want to go back to these, just to the whole topic of cryptids out in the Four Corners area. You have, I know there are things that you cannot tell us about yet, that you're holding back for reasons that you told me about today. But you have had some DNA tests done. Is there anything you can tell us about those tests, anything at all that you can share with the audience about that?
I would come down to the point that it's what we were looking for. At least we are convinced there's a commonality amongst other samples that this is what is generally viewed as this particular kind of creature. You know, I can share that much.
Okay.
And the rest is kind of in limbo and hiatus, as I explained to you. And actually, I would like to talk to you further about that personally, but that'll be something later at a later time. But okay. And some advice from you, too. I would really appreciate some mentorship on some of these situations. But aside from that, yeah, very fascinating, very interesting. Rolling into this type of thing, I can't say I'm fairly happy about knowing that it's what we expected.
And so which creature it is, you've got to hold those cards for right now, right?
It's the same thing we've been seeing out here for years as far as that type of unknown that's known to us.
Okay.
It's everything we said it was. It always has been.
Since you were on with us last time, obviously there have been developments, there have been discoveries, there have been things that for you would be, you would say, okay, now that's cool. That takes us further down the road. Out of all the things that you've run into since you were with us last time, sort of sort through that and pick out one or two of the most vital or interesting and share with us for just a moment.
Wow. Oh, boy. Like I said, it was a really, really busy spring and summer. Yeah. I want to go back to the pipe, pipe that was attacked to withdraw this gun. What is brought up and what I bring up in that video is, in the end, you know, most animals avoid skunks. I mean, I've been informed that there are animals that do eat skunks and so forth. It's been our experience out here in the Four Corners area that a skunk will lay by the side of the road till it evaporates. Nothing will touch it. We've got some of the hungriest turkey buzzards you've ever witnessed. But my feeling on that is the attacker of the skunk needed that skunk sac to protect its young and to go smear that smell on its young, and they would be more protected. And even on themselves, I think it's a good mask. It's a good thing to hide behind. And we've often wondered if these creatures could make the smell by themselves, if it was something naturally occurring in their morphology or whatever, that they could make this smell, or if it was introduced. And I come away from what happened with that incident with the skunk and the pipe thinking that it's something that's introduced and it's something that they have to have on hand to make that smell and to protect themselves. Because so, I've smelled these guys, like I said, I've been close enough to feel their breath and body heat on my back, you know, and spin around with a spotlight, and they're already busting brush. I mean, so fast, they move so quickly. But I didn't get that smell that night. that particular instance, and that was really close to me. I got the really musky, wet dog kind of smell, but not the skunky thing. And when I got that day out there investigating the attack on this skunk in the pipe, I got the mixture of the wet, musky dog smell with the skunk. This individual is probably no further than 20 yards away from us in the heavy bushes, watching our activities out there filming that day and examining this pipe and taking those samples. And that's when I got the whole smell, you know, away from the skunk and the struggle, and there was some residual skunk odor in the area and inside the pipe also. But standing out away from that, I got that wet dog smell with the skunk. And I'm like, bam! I mean, you're right there. I could run out there and tag you right now. I mean, right there, and I got the full smell, and it all made sense to me there. And and I'm just speaking from a personal experience, having smelled the two different smells and then smelling them together.
Well, do you think, you know, lots and lots and lots of people talk about the really awful smell that these creatures have. Do you think that it's because they are all practicing that? Are they all smearing themselves with skunk scent?
You know, that's a tough call, too, because Brenda, this canyon we work up there on the Lukachukai, one night, some of the crew, they basically kind of sort of, not in a really violent kind of way, but several of the crew, I wasn't with them, decided to leave the area. And some really strange things happened. Their batteries kept draining. They couldn't keep their batteries charged enough to get out of this canyon. The battery that was working, they were swapping between vehicles and working their way up out of the canyon. And once they got to the top of the trail, this smell hit them. And then they really wanted to get out of there, you know, because there was a... people react differently to the smell. It was like a funky, freaky, scary kind of thing that happened to the crew when that smell hit them. And it was more, not quite a panic, but a really good rush. It's time to go. We're getting out of here. Brenda and her sister, and she's in the video. It's called The Harvest, and it's on our Crypto Four Corners channel on YouTube. They went up the next night after they'd heard about that. They were just wanted to kind of hang out and check things out. And Brenda's sister used to be a police officer and at the time was a game warden. And they were up there, and these large stumps were falling in around them by the fire, just kerplunk. And they walked around the vehicle, Brenda did, and she saw one of the big stumps. And she kind of looked up at the ridge and said, thank you, and she pulled it over and put it on the fire. So it was like, you know, they were, I don't know if they were trying to be noticed or if they were getting them firewood or what. And they heard something walking around the outside of the camp, and they both lit him up at the same time. And he was a pretty big guy, probably around 10 or 12 feet tall. And what they found kind of comical at the time is he went behind the small aspen tree and tried to conceal himself, and he's sticking out. And he's 5 feet wide at the shoulders, and he's trying to hide behind this little aspen tree. And then he probably got a slight giggle from the ladies until the smell hit him. And like I said, her sister didn't react very well to the smell. And, you know, Brenda and they both, you know, controlled the situation and decided it was time to leave. And I also asked about his appearance. I said, what did he look like? He said he looked very well groomed, like his fur had been, you know, brushed. He had a gleam to him. He just looked really sharp. Very, very well manicured as far as a fur would go.
All right, now let's go back to that story. And folks, we'll open up the phone lines here in just a moment. But let's go back to the story you told us about Brigham Young. Now, for people who don't know, Brigham Young is one of the early leaders of what today we call the Mormon Church, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He was a disciple of Joseph Smith, and of course, the university out in Utah is called Brigham Young University. So he's on his horse, and he's galloping along there, and one of these Sasquatch-like creatures comes up and paces him. And in the story, Brigham Young speaks to him, and the thing speaks back to him. Okay. Have you had accounts of any other Sasquatch ever speaking to humans?
You know, I've got to tell you, we spent a week out with Janice Carter a few years ago, and if anyone remembers the episode of National Geographic, Is It Real? She's the one who had the patriarch Sasquatch named Fox, who had come to her back door and knocked on the back door and said, "Do you have any garlic?" And she made a pretty convincing, I don't know if it was pareidolia or what it was, but I mean, in the Sierra sounds and so forth, some of the things we were listening to that she was interpreting, it did sound like some type of English. Very interesting. And then Chief Dan and I, and I've got that up on YouTube, I believe it's C4C, the Look at You Guys, is just very, there's several trips in the video. And Leonard, Dan, and I are standing above this sheep camp up on this ridge. We just heard, we had sat out a rainstorm in his vehicle, and when the rain quit, I came out and I was kicking out a place to set my tent up, and he was still near his vehicle coming down, and we had a scream, roar, scream, horrible vocalization maybe 100 feet from us, and I didn't catch sight of anything, and it really caught me off guard. And then down below the ridge, probably 150 feet in front of us, this thing goes, "Who you be?" And Leonard and I looked at each other, and we both mouthed it to each other, like, "Who you be? Who you be? Yeah, yeah, yeah." So we thought we heard language. "Who you be?" And shortly thereafter, something was rocking out on the trees down the trail, you know, knocking on some wood. And, you know, I think we interrupted a raid or something to punish these people in the sheep camp, you know, because it didn't happen that night. And everything took off. You know, we went down after the wood knocking, and they kept going further back, and they go further down the trail and keep knocking. And we just had cameras with us. We didn't have any firearms with us at the time. I go, "This is far enough." And we saw some, a pair of hairy legs behind some bushes, and then that took off. So we came back. But honestly, you know, him and I to this day believe we heard some type of language, "Who you be?" And I don't know, like, back to the pareidolia or whatever they call that, you know, the power of suggestion type deal.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't anybody there suggesting what this thing just said. We both clearly heard what we believe to have been "Who you be."
So if it was some sort of hallucination, you both had it at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't a hallucination.
Okay.
It was one of those Depends moments, you know. I recommend adult Depends. Truly.
All right. Look, let me ask you this question, and then we're going to open up the phone lines. After all of your investigations, and especially after this incident where you heard what sounded like language to you and to Chief Dan, what's your estimation? Are these things animal or human?
You know, and there's a lot of things that I've said for years now, and I've alluded to for years now, that with some of the sensitive things that are going on presently, I really can't come out and say it. But I will tell you, a lot of the testing, and this is common knowledge, a lot of the testing comes back 99% human, 1% unknown, or 1% unknown primate. So just look at the statistics there, and I think you can draw some conclusions for yourself and anyone else listening.
All right. I'm going to open up the telephone line so our audience can participate with us in this discussion. I got an email this week where someone said, "I hope you don't mind me asking the questions you're afraid to ask." And my response was, ask anything you want to. And I'm not afraid to ask anything. But, folks, you have to realize one brain, mine, can't think of all the questions to ask. That's why we open the phone lines for you. So that you can participate in the conversation and you can help us with the interview with your questions, all right? The telephone number is 623-444-5889. That works from anywhere on planet Earth, probably also on planet X. 623-444-5889. In the USA and Canada, we have a toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. And if you need to call me toll-free, you may use that number. We also have, for those of you not in the USA and not in Canada, we have the Flash Message feature on our website. So you just go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. And to the right of it, you will see a link that says Flash Message. And the reason we have that for you, if you're outside the USA or Canada, you can call our main number, 623-444-5889. On the other hand, if you don't want to make an international long-distance call, I don't have an 800 number, a toll-free number for you, but we have the Flash Message option, okay? All right, to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin. Long time no hear.
Yeah, definitely. I finally got a weekday off. It's about time. Hello there, Mr. Johnson.
How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing okay. Kevin Smith, he's very, very low on my end. I almost missed him talking there.
Well, the object is for us to hear you, and we can.
Yes. Mr. Johnson, I've got a question to ask, and I've also got want to add my own opinion on the issue. Where do you think these Sasquatches or Bigfoots actually come from?
I think they were here long. Well, actually, they were here long before even the Native American cultures that showed up out here. Long before that.
Okay. And my input on these fellows, I think that they were part of the genetic manipulation that the gods did with the DNA of probably the indigenous peoples on this planet, and I think they may have been perhaps one of the quote unquote maybe according to them anyway a failed experiments. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of things, you know, biblically would point back to a Nephilim-type creature. And if we go to Genesis 6, the sons of God found the women fair, and they took among them wives, as many as they wanted. And their offspring were freakish in nature. I mean, giants, giant stature. I think a lot of the things when you talk about Zeus being combined with a human woman and a slash god or watcher, he probably did exist. I think a lot of these great men of renown, as is mentioned in Genesis, there's probably a lot of basis to Greek mythology and some of the other things that we'll read about throughout history as far as incredible people and giant statures of people and people who could do incredible things.
Absolutely.
A man-angel, so to speak.
Also, Lloyd Pye also postulates that these Bigfoots may actually, in fact, be the last surviving remnants of the Neanderthals who escaped to the forest to escape the oncoming the attempted genocide that was done by the Homo sapien race that came onto the scene later on. What about that?
I'll tell you my feeling on this is, too, you know, when I talk to the people who are sitting by their fire in their cabin or their hogan or their house, and these hairy hominids are peering in, watching them, I think they would rather be in that room with them next to that warm fire and not freezing off their tushies outside. They can't. They're serving a sentence.
Sure. Absolutely. Well,
the
great
covet.
Work that you've done on these fellows, by the way.
What's that, sir?
There are great work that you've done on it. I've been enjoying the entire show. I really like your work that you've done.
And I hope you go visit our Cryptophore Corners channel on YouTube. I've got probably 22 videos there you can spend some time with. And add me on Facebook. tons and tons and tons of photos. I'm a sharer. I'm a giver. I'm not a hider. So, enjoy.
Sure, I'll do that.
Kevin, do you mind if I voice an opinion on the Neanderthal theory? I guess he minds. He's gone. But on the Neanderthal theory, I don't think so. Neanderthals were shorter, stockier, but shorter than us, than Homo sapien. So I don't think it's them. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi.
How you doing, John?
Hi, how you doing? I'll just put out a little proposition here.
Okay.
What I'm thinking is these creatures are kind of the opposite of what we're doing. And, normal human inclination would be towards technology, convenience. We accept the money system, that kind of thing. And that makes me think that, maybe not every living hominid would want to go towards what we're going to, and they actually might think that what the mainstream is going towards is the opposite of what they want. So they're kind of a cultural branch heading off into a more natural way of being and wanting to preserve that more natural way of being, which I would be inclined to think is has got some psychic ability and maybe even some shape-shifting ability to it. So that's what I'm thinking.
There's also the possibility too that they can use portals. We've got some rather disturbing videotape that was some surveillance tape to catch something else, and we've got what I believe is a craft and/or portal, and that's up on YouTube too. A brief snippet of it, but it's from the same sighting area, and we didn't expect to capture what shows up in this. But I mean, as far as all this activity in the sky, here we have something 45 minutes of activity on the ground, and at one point it appears a ramp comes out of this portal and/or craft, and things are going up and down this ramp. It's really interesting. But, to speculate on them, I'm left, after all these years, I'm left to believe, because I've been out there with them, I've been close to them. And when they come in and watch, it's not so much out of curiosity, it's out of covetousness. And they covet. They covet.
How can you tell that?
What's that?
How can you tell that?
Because I don't think the curious factor, they can watch us all the time. We're squatch vision because they don't have television, and they watch us. And they're always watching us. And it's just, it's an inert feeling inside of me that they want to be sitting around that warm campfire.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. It's the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with J.C. Johnson. J.C., we've got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry. What's on your mind this evening?
I got a question for you real quick, Kevin. Are you doing a lot of clicking on your computer and stuff?
No.
Because I hear a lot of clicking through the audio.
No.
I just wonder if it's you or if it's if we have some guests out there.
Well, it could be that, or it could be, I mean, it can be anything. It could be some kind of equipment problems out there on the line, or I don't know. No clicking here.
I'd like to ask your guest what he thought about those clowns that that police officer and other guy claimed they had a Sasquatch. Did he believe it, or what side of the fence was he on when he heard about that?
Well, actually, I was there when the rubber foot came out of the ice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, and
so,
I got a question.
I don't have a very good opinion of those gentlemen who perpetrated the costume stuff with horrendously stinky animal parts. I don't have pleasant words to say about them.
I was wondering,
that mess up.
Do you or Kevin know that if did any of those guys ever get prosecuted for any of that?
That's what I'm continuing to look into also, because immediately after the rubber foot came out of the ice, we called the FBI and tried to get some type of interstate something, and they said because of the value, because they had only put up $50,000, it wasn't a big enough thing for them to pursue, so they had to pursue other means. And I'm still watching with interest to see what develops out of this, believe me.
Only $50,000.
Yeah, only $50,000, yeah, right. I just, before I hang up here, I just wonder, you know, over the years, you know, decades here now, we've been hearing about, you know, Bigfoot, whatever name you want to give it, but yet we've never caught one yet. You know, does either one of you have an answer to that? I would think by now somebody would have one, and I'll listen offline. That's all I have. Thanks.
All right.
Probably some of the best stories I've heard as far as one of these that's been shot is the body might lay there for a day or two, and then they'll come back and the body's gone, and or somebody picked it up, some of the friends or whatever came and removed the body, and or the body healed and got up and took off by itself. And something like that happened down in Johor a few years back. I thought it was interesting. We've done some follow-up. There were some sheep herders who supposedly had a body up on a ridge, and it laid there and decomposed and got down pretty much just skeletal remains. And we were going to go in and do an extraction, and a week before we went up, the body wasn't there anymore. So just something really interesting to think about, whether they bury their own or, you know, something like that, or if the bodies just disappear. I don't know.
All right, we've got a flash message here from Jeff in Australia, and he wants to know, do you still do your radio show?
I'll be firing that up here probably, hopefully next month, or maybe this month. Sporadically, we do the show. We're so busy with the research that to get into a regular schedule for a show is just not going to work out for us at this time. And we love doing the show. I love having the great guests on that we've had and the great friends we have and the great friends we've made, you know. You caught me today at a perfect time to be on your show, Mr. Smith, so here I am. But, yeah, we're very busy. But we'd like to start the show back up probably later this month.
All right, let's go back to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Mr. Johnson, I've heard that when the Lewis and Clark first came out west, there were some large, hairy individuals living with the Indians, or at least socializing with them on a regular basis. Is it possible that it is the same?
it's a possibility. And it also goes back to, you know, we go into a Neanderthal type thing where they used to come in and trade with the Indians. They bring in skins and things like that. They had a little trade thing going on, and they were not like the Native Americans.
Typically, in Native American lore,
these giants would come in and take women and children and different things like that. I don't think they had a real social thing going on with the large hairy hominids. What history tells us in the writings that we have, you know, it might have been a hairy hominid of a smaller variety that they had interactions with. I can't be sure. You know, I'm just speaking from a historical background, what I've looked into this. But it's a possibility.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly.
My question is, what could you learn from the Indians that would make it more likely you would have personal contact with these creatures?
You know, if you followed any of our work, most of our crew is Native American over the years, and we're mostly working in reservation areas. And the curiosity factor on my end, you know, is what is the draw to the Native American culture? We can go up to Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and, you know, around harvest time and feast times and some of the festivities they have, that's when the height of the sightings are. You know, why is that so? And why is it? Because I would think 90% of your sightings happen in and or near Native American reservations. What is the draw to these people?
That's what I'm
And we've got about. History of these furry creatures going back 500 years. We've got Franciscan monks out here in the Albuquerque area writing of some different encounters with these hairy hominids as it relates to the Native Americans at that time back in the 1780s, where women have actually been taken and kidnapped and brought to an island on the Rio Grande. And eventually they learned the pattern of these pattern behavior individuals, how long they would be gone hunting, when they would come back, and they were able to escape. And when they did get home finally, they both had children, and they seemed normal enough according to the writings of this Franciscan monk. This was a firsthand writings, what had happened to these women.
Interesting.
We're talking about the Russian Amnesty. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I've heard about those too.
And the Russian Alma that was brought and captured and brought into basically captivity. I mean, they gave her all the wine she wanted eventually after she was tame, and she had probably, I believe, four children. And Igor Borstev and Bayanov, between the two of them, they've dug up all her grandkids, and they finally dug her up. And her children appeared normal enough, too. They didn't come out all hairy. They had hair tempers. One of the children lost his arm in a sword fight or some type of fight, but they looked normal enough. They didn't come out hairy like she was.
And
she was, you know, maybe 6 feet tall, 4 feet wide at the shoulders, hairy, very, very muscled, you know. But the children were normal enough that came out of her.
Okay, you say they dug her up.
Yes, they finally dug up Alma.
Okay, and did they do any DNA testing?
That I'm not aware of. I've just seen some of the photos.
Yeah. All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. That's the telephone number to call if you have a question or a comment for our guest, J.C. Johnson, or maybe you know something about these Sasquatch that we haven't covered, and or skinwalkers that we haven't covered, and you could add to our body of knowledge here. We would appreciate it. Believe me, we would. Toll-free in the USA and Canada, the number is 888-223-4599. And then if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, You can call the main number, and we'd be more than happy to hear from you. But if you don't want to call and make that that international long-distance call, you can go to my website and scroll down. You see the picture about tonight's show. Just look to the right. You'll see a link that says Flash Message. You can click that, and but you have to be outside the USA, outside of Canada. I'll never see it. All right, now, JC, what are the chances that these Sasquatch creatures, at least some of them, are skinwalkers?
Yeah, that's the difference, too, because most of the times when we talk to people about sightings, as far as the hairy hominids go, mostly they're in the practice of gathering calories. They're fishing. They've got a deer over their shoulder, not necessarily going out and terrorizing anybody or picking anyone out in particular to harass or bother. There's a difference. There's a big difference between the two. Mm-hmm. And I won't tie the two together, not at this point.
Do you think if there was a meeting between a skinwalker and one of these hairy hominids, do you think the hairy hominid would win?
Would just rip them up. Like, you know, I would hope that. I mean, you know, on the side of good, because, you know, the scales are still out there and the jury is still out on our large hairy hominid friends. I would hope that they wouldn't tolerate something in that realm in their presence. I would hope they wouldn't tolerate it.
What do you think we can look for here in the fairly near future with relative to discoveries about the Sasquatch? I mean, are we getting close to being able to say with any definition or specificity?
I think we're very close, and you know, I would hope and pray that the information that has been gathered is going to be shared in the very near future. I hope and pray for that. There's enough information gathered to share this.
Is there enough information gathered for us to be able to say with any degree of certainty that these creatures do exist?
I think at that point in time, with the commonalities that have been gathered, I think it's going to be a very convincing case, and it'll still be something of controversy. I think it always will be, and I actually hope we never have to have a body brought in, at least one that someone can actually keep and show. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope with the information gathered, we can take a really hard look at the facts. And, you know, they won't listen to God. They won't listen to you, but they'll listen to science.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach, ladies and gentlemen. That means, of course, we only have a few minutes left. If you intend to call, now is the time. My guest this evening, J.C. Johnson, who is a cryptid investigator in the Four Corners area here in the United States of America. And I checked the flash messages while we were at break, J.C. We have one from Bjorn in Sweden. And he says, you didn't seem to answer why there are no good photos. Okay, let's revisit that. Why? Tell us again, why do you think that with all the sightings, there don't seem to be any at least reasonably clear photos of these things?
That's a good question. And once again, I really couldn't say why. The opportunities I've had to get photos, they're questionable. I mean, I can go back. We had the fishing Bigfoot down in the Hogback area here in the Four Corners. It's on the reservation. And all I can show is there's something large in the water, out in the water, and I can show the after photos to show that there's nothing large in the water, like a fixed object. You know, as far as really good detail, I think it would come down to the camera equipment I had at the time. It wasn't par excellence, you know. But
yeah, but there are...
At least on my part. You know,
yeah.
I can show there's something there and there's something not there. So it's not a fixed object.
Yeah, but... A UFO is not a fixed object, and we get good videos of those. We get some pretty lousy videos, too, but we've had some excellent videos and
yes.
and snapshots. And you would think the same thing would apply to a Sasquatch because, yes, it's a moving object, but so is a UFO.
That's, you know, it's just a tough call.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough call.
Now, you've seen them, right?
Opportunity-wise, too, also, typically they're going to seek shelter, brush, trees. You know, by the time you see one and you bring that camera up, they're already gone. Or by the time you think to bring that camera up,
mm-hmm.
they're already gone. At least from a personal experience on my part.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the thing to do is to wear a head cam, like a headlamp. Head cam, and it's already on, you know. Okay, last call for this evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kev. It's Boomer from Vancouver Island.
Hello, Boomer.
How's it going tonight, guys?
Hi, Boomer.
Hey, hi. Best for last, hopefully. Absolute crystal clear pictures and videos if you want to spend the $5. Sylvanic.com, a Canadian researcher. I think he's a naturalist or a, I'm not really sure there. The pictures and the video are about 20 feet away. The guy's got a TV quality video camera. They're absolutely amazing.
What's the name of the website?
Pardon?
What's the name of the website?
Todd Standing.
Yeah, Todd Standing, that's right.
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
I've seen the pictures and the video, yes.
What did you think?
You know, the thing is, all these years I've never, ever, ever picked on anybody else's work, and I'm not going to start it this time.
Those are
incredible pictures, and if we've got the real deal, that's incredible video, definitely.
Well, all I know is he spent months in the Canadian Parliament trying to pass a protected species law, same as what Washington State ended up doing, and I just can't see this guy is so dedicated. He's the real deal. I'm positive. Anyways, guys.
All right, don't go yet. Don't go yet. Don't go yet. Boomer, boomer, boomer. Don't go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I asked a moment ago, what's the name of the website where these pictures are?
Sylvanic.com. I'll spell it if you want.
Please do.
sylvanic.com.
All right, I'll check that out. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, have a good night, guys. Great
right.
show, Kev.
Bye. All right, thanks. Okay, because of time constraints, we just don't have time to take another call, but I want to thank everyone who has called in this evening. I want to thank everyone who has sent us a flash message this evening. And, JC, What's in the immediate future for you and for your organization?
I'm looking forward to disclosure of what's already been gathered. That's what I'm looking forward to. And that should be something very, very momentous and probably something of a world event.
And do you think this will happen soon?
I hope and pray soon.
Okay. The situation you described to me, I assume, is what's holding it back?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope and pray that soon you'll be able to do that. Do you have any, are there any hot cases that have been reported recently out in the Four Corners area?
We go back to the skinwalkers. We had a young man who was attacked about 3 weeks ago. And, you know, Brenda was out there basically on the scene right after the fact. We've got pictures of the young man with the scratches on his face, and he's fairly familiar with the hairy hominid Sasquatch type appearance of someone, and this was something else that attacked him. It wasn't like he surprised anything and it, you know, just grabbed onto him. This thing came after him and attacked him, and he's a 13-year-old boy. And he was able, he just kept punching this thing's face till it let go of him. But he said the face was incredibly hard. And, you know, I hope and pray for this young man that he's left alone. But the good thing is he's got contact with people who know what he's dealing with now. And they show up in mass and run these things off and out of there. And everybody out there, instead of hiding under the covers or crawling under the bed, get together with your neighbors and fight these things. Push them back. Let them know you're not afraid. Get the fear factor out of it, because they feed off your fear. Don't give them that. Fight, fight, fight.
All right. Now, let me ask you this. Is that the normal response out on the Navajo Nation's territory, on their reservation? Is that the normal response that people have, or do they normally run and hide in fear?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of the fear factor and the superstition factor, but as people get together and take these things on, they flee. Resist them, they will flee.
Why do you suppose that is? Have to be pretty quick, because we've only got 30 seconds here.
30 seconds. It's something ingrained, and it's brought on, and it's passed on through oral tradition. But, like I said, a lot of the younger people coming up and out of some of these things and these superstitions are looking at things for what they really are, and they're taking them on headlong. And God bless you guys, and be strong, and fight.
All right, JC, just stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be it. We are out of time. I appreciate JC Johnson for coming and sharing with us this evening. Strange things happening right under our noses, right here in the good old USA. And they certainly fit within our genre, do they not? What do you think about it? Let me hear from you this week, all right? Love to get your email. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.